family picture frames.
Who are the people in yours? I'm Josh.
And I'm Christy. In This Together is a podcast where we discuss topics related to today's family. We also go behind the scenes to share stories from our own crooked picture frame.
And we interview guests to discover how their stories can give us insight on becoming families who live, love, and lead well.
Because you're not alone. We're in this together. This episode of the In This Together podcast is brought to you by Lifeway Women. For more information about all the events Lifeway Women has to offer, visit lifeway.com/womensevents. Welcome back to the In This Together podcast. We are here live at Daystar Counseling Ministries in Nashville, Tennessee. And today we are talking with David Thomas about raising boys and what our boys really need. You've probably heard David before on the podcast if you've listened, and if you haven't, I would just encourage you to go back and listen to some of the previous episodes. David is our resident therapist for all things boys. He's written a couple books, which we'll put in the show notes, but we're talking mostly about wild things today, the art of nurturing boys. And we talk about it in the podcast, but this truly is my favorite book. And it has changed so much of how I relate with our son. And I hope it does the same for you. I literally took notes once again, every time I talk with David, about how I can do this better. And we broke it into age groups. And so we start with the explorer stage, you know, 0 to 4. And then we moved on to the lover stage, 5 to 8. So wherever your boy is, the boy in your life, if it's your grandson or your son or even a nephew, you can listen in. But also, we go all the way through up into the warrior stage when we're launching them into adulthood. And it gives so much context and I think hope for us that no matter what the stage we're in, there is so much hope and potential for our boys. And if we can lean in the things that they need from their dad, the things that they need from a mom, it's not just critical. And I don't say that in like a shaming way, but we get to be a part of this, and it's actually easier and simpler than we think.
And so if you are listening and you're thinking about, your own son in your life or your grandson, and you're looking at his journey, David will be in this episode talking about different books that he's been a part of and had the privilege to write, Are My Kids on Track, as well as Wild Things. We're going to put those in the show notes, so make sure you download those. Go to the show notes and actually get those books. They are two of our favorite books. And David is just, the way he talks about how we can engage our boys is just, as Christy said, refreshing and simple. And so we want to invite you in right now to our conversation with David Thomas. Welcome back to the In This Together podcast. We are here at Daystar. Last week, you heard from our dear friend Sissy Goff talking about girls and what girls need. This week, we are here and we are with David Thomas, and we are talking about boys today. So thank you for taking the time, David, to be with us. We're so, so grateful for you and for your time and everything that you do.
It is my pleasure. I love being in your company. Glad to be with you both again.
Today, we're going to talk about, let's just jump right in with the question that we asked Sissy last week, is what is the biggest concern you see today as you counsel boys, work with boys, seeing boys in our culture? You do a lot of research and writing and that type of thing as well. What is the biggest concern you see for boys today?
Well, first off, let me say, I don't really love going after Sissy Goff on anything. So can we flip-flop these episodes? Is that an option?
Well, no, ladies go first.
I always sound less intelligent when I follow her. With that question, I would say, and this really spans development from young boys all the way to adolescent males, I would say probably the biggest hurdle I see with consistency is boys struggling to identify what they feel and what to do with it. In fact, if I were to shrink down all of the emotional milestones that we write about in our brand new book, I would say that's kind of the two-sentence summary of what they're all about, just helping the kids we love figure out what do I feel and what to do with it, and all the ways that I see that spill out with boys, again, across development. Like every concern that I have for an adolescent boy I'm seeing right now who's struggling with substances is rooted in that. I can't tell you how often I'll hear a teenage boy say to me, I only use because I'm stressed. It just helps me take the edge off. And that sense of he can't work with whatever is going on internally. And so it's the sense of I want to shut that down. I want to numb that out and think about all the different ways and places that that translates to. I think gaming accomplishes that for boys. I think pornography accomplishes that for adolescent males as well. But all of those examples really being about, you know, at the root is I just can't work with what's going on inside of me and I want it to stop.
It's so fascinating because it's great that you're following Sissy, because we talked about how for parents today, she talked about, especially for girls, how we're hyper attuned as parents and how that's increasing anxiety in girls, and anxiety being the concern she sees. By the way, she read 23 books recently on anxiety. Have you read 23 books recently on anything that boys do?
No, that's why I don't want to go after her.
Stop it. You're just mean.
No, I was like,
did she tell you that reading those 23 books gave her some anxiety?
I can imagine it did. But so as parents, and I don't know if this is true or how this translates into if parents today are hyper attuned in some respects to kids, when we're talking about boys here, it's almost like boys might know what they're feeling, but they don't know what to do with it, maybe.
There
maybe
it is.
Parents aren't giving them the tools for how to handle it. Is that kind of what
you
you're...
You are so correct. You are. And I would say, I think that's definitely evidence of where we've come a ways over time, and we've moved in a great direction. And I do think parents are more attuned and helping boys make connections with what they feel. But what happens with, you know, when we're so attuned that we're not giving them the space to work that through, to problem solve, to develop critical thinking, to wrestle through. I mean, with even the everyday of things like difficult homework, I talk about how important it is for a boy to have to sit at the kitchen table, and boys often are so vocal when they struggle with homework. You know, this math is so hard, I can't do all these problems, you know, those sorts of things. But that groaning and that working it through and figuring out how to navigate something that's difficult, whether it's hard homework or boredom or disappointment or failure, any number of things, being able to work that through.
Wow. So how would you say, let's start at the beginning. If we start, say, I know in your book, Wild Things, you break it into age categories, but...
Which is one of Christy's favorite books of all time, by the way.
No, that's so true. No, that is absolutely 100% true, because our firstborn is a boy, and it felt like, I don't know, you're like thrown into the deep end, you know, without a floaty. Like, I actually do not understand you. And you, David Thomas, have helped me understand my son and put language to things that it just doesn't make it so fearful. It's like, oh, there's a reason you want to beat up the dog, you know, and that's maybe not you're not crazy. Mm. So if let's start with the youngest. If you want to, I know you do 2 to 4, but however you want to start, whatever you want, 2 to 4, we did with Sissy, you know, 0 to 5, but, how do we as parents help our kids, our boys, walk through that stage, giving them the tools they need to do those hard things and work through those hard things?
Mm. First of all, thank you for those words. It's really kind. And my great hope with that book, if nothing else happens, is that parents can walk away with more of a sense of, he is normal. Mm-hmm. This is normal.
That's
and
it
feeling
That's
less
it.
Overwhelming. Because I think particularly for moms, I mean, they are fascinating creatures and wired so differently. And so I think there is so much for moms in particular that feels foreign and strange.
Yeah.
And abnormal. And so I think to really speak to some of that was a great desire for mine. And with that first stage, it really is birth through 4. I focus in the most on 2 to 4. And I call boys in that stage the explorers. Mm-hmm. And I think that word says so much. He's curious about his world. He is an active, moving creature. I spent a lot of time in that first chapter talking about how important I think it is to know what's going on with his brain. Mm-hmm. That explains why he is this active, moving, loud creature, so that we're not going to places of thinking he's not normal, or why can't he regulate himself the way she can? Why can't he focus? Why can't fill in the blank with so many things? And so that boy brain section in that chapter, I think, is maybe one of the more important sections in the whole book. And within that, as we understand what's going on in his brain, I talk a lot about engagement with boys. And I think what I say to be true with explorers is honestly something that will stay true for all boys in all stages. Like I talk about when we talk with a boy, when we coach him, when we discipline him, when we engage him in any way, I want us to think about appealing to all of his senses. So Josh and I, if Josh is my son and we're having a conversation about anything, I'm going to have my hand on his shoulder. I'm going to start with your name. I'm going to be making eye contact with you. I'm going to make sure my conversation is simple. I'm going to get it down to as few words as possible. I think we will spend way too much of a boy's life talking at him and talking to him and very little of that landing on him. In fact, I talk about within that chapter too, part of the brain section is that he's primarily early on a tactile and kinesthetic learner. So he loves to touch and feel and explore the world that way. And he will grow into being a visual, spatial, and experiential learner. And nowhere in that list is auditory. Oh, so
I remember that was maybe one of the most impactful things because I realized I threw so many words and instructions and like reasons for why we're not doing, you know, why you shouldn't have done this, an explanation. And you make it like some of the phrases that I know you've referenced, like when we correct them, and it is literally just what you said, the fewest amount of words possible. It's directional. It's not explanational, or if that makes, or if that's the word, but I felt like I always had to soften it. Like, okay, maybe next time, you know, but you're just adding words and you're losing them.
Yes.
Whereas it's almost, it's like almost like a command, really, like a, you would to a dog, which we're in puppy stage. We have a 5-month-old puppy, and you realize you throw words at a puppy too. And they don't understand. They want like one word. And boys aren't that much different. But a woman's brain doesn't understand
that. Right. Right. And you know, it's so funny. I talk often about the similarities between boys and puppies. And I think there's so much to dog training that works with boys. But that's a great example. Like we don't say, it's time for you to sit down. We say, sit.
Exactly.
Down.
Yes.
Roll over, whatever it may be. But it's very concrete and commanding instructions.
Teeth. Bed. Shower.
There it is. Yes.
Eat.
Yes. Apply all of that.
I love the practical placing the hand on the shoulder, saying his name. There's something about, I think there's, we could probably go deeper into this at some point, but just hearing your name and the power of that name and who he is and what that, how he's uniquely made and gifted and who God created him to be.
Yes.
So let's move into the explorer. You described the explorer phase as about age 5 to 8, which is where our son is now. And I'm sorry, the explorer, the lover stage. We just talked about the explorer, the lover stage. And I'm going to go back to something you said here earlier, because I feel like we just scored a big one here the other day is, our son just learned how to take the training wheels off of his bicycle and he didn't want to do it. He was so just like, I don't want to do it. It's like the doing the homework, right? Like, I don't want to do it, Dad. Like, no, I can't. Like, this is, I don't want to do it. And then finally, you know, I'm like, just, you know, I just coaching one step at a time. Like, we're going to take him off. Don't sit on the seat. Just, you know, walk. Within a day, the kid is like racing and pedaling around our cul-de-sac. It's like just as fast as he possibly can with the brightest, biggest smile on his face. Like, I conquered the world. Like that image and that visual for me was so powerful as you said that. Mm. So I feel like I had a dad win this week. So
I love that story.
But so tell us, because he's in this lover stage right now, age 5 to 8. What do we need to do as parents? What do boys need from maybe dad, maybe mom, maybe separately? What do they need from us during this stage?
Your son is in my favorite pocket of development. I often say if I could freeze a boy in his development, I'd freeze him in the lover stage. And a part of that is just he's tender. He's so tender in this stage. It's honestly one of my favorite moments in terms of my work with boys. Like working with kindergarten through third grade boys is my sweet spot. Like I love it. I love conversations that I can have with them. I love how imaginative they are. I love how open I feel like they are. And so a part of why I labor so long in the explorer stage, setting the stage for what's going on with his brain, is that if we aren't employing some of those strategies in this stage, what can happen in this tender moment of the lover stage is he can take some real hits to his sense of self. Like a lot of his sense of self comes from respecting authority. He wants the grown-ups around him to be pleased with him. So I talk about in the explorer stage, making those adjustments with how we talk with him and engage him so that he's not always bumping up against this sense, which I think boys sadly often do with teachers and coaches and parents, different adults in their lives, like, I'm not hitting the mark. I'm not following through. They're exasperated with me. I think boys in throughout life can feel so much don't, no, stop it, quit running, like all of these words and phrases that communicate that sense of you aren't hitting the mark. You're not doing what you need to do. And in that stage, in the lover stage, it can really affect his sense of who he believes he is.
I see that a lot in our son. I mean, many of his tears are when he feels like he's disappointed us or let us down.
Yeah.
Yeah, very much so. So how can we, I mean, you just stated one, just being very careful about how we're speaking to him.
Yes.
And not, you know, being harsh or stop it, knock it off. Why did you do that?
Well, and I think too, even thinking about, which is where I love, Christy, what you said, going back to thinking about how we're giving him instruction. So when I teach the class on boys, I'll even give an example of, all right, I'll pull a man up in the crowd and I'll say, I'm going to talk with you. I want you to be my 5-year-old son. And we're going to talk about how you leave dirty clothes all over the house. And I do a demonstration that involves those things we talk about. I've got my hand on his shoulder. I'm saying things like, Josh, dirty clothes go in the basket. Now say it back to me. And I'm giving one command. And then I will laugh with the moms in the room and say, okay, if I'd called one of you up and said, be my mom and I'll be your 5-year-old son, talk to me about how I leave dirty clothes everywhere. I don't know for sure, but my guess would be it might have gone a little more like, now, sweetheart, where do we leave dirty clothes when we take those off? Haven't we talked a lot about wet towels in the corner of the bathroom and how they mailed you? And we all crack up, and I say,
it's like we think it's gentler or
and
something
it is.
To
it's,
use a lot of words.
It's
I don't know.
I think that second demonstration is a lot kinder and warmer, but I don't think it's concrete and commanding as we've talked about. And so then what happens, in fact, I flip it and I'll say, I'm going to guess maybe it would, if it had kept on going, it would have gone something like this. I talk about how every day I think cars and SUVs and vans pull into driveways and we say things to boys like, all right, listen up. We got a lot to do. I don't want those muddy cleats in my house. Drop them outside. Hang your backpack in the locker. I want you to head on up and take your shower first tonight because we got to get on that science project. Meet me at the table. We'll eat and then get on the homework.
What should I do first, Dad?
And there it is. And we find him somewhere in the house building a Lego project or playing with the dog. And we're like, 100%. What are you doing? And he hears, feels that exasperation again. And I think that's on us. So that's where I think he takes a lot of those hits to his sense of self. And in that moment, I would say, that's not his failure. That's ours.
Ooh.
Like, we gave way too many instructions in that example.
And how, like, that gives me a, I mean, and not, this is not a shame thing for us as parents, especially I think us as moms. Like, it's just an awareness thing that we can actually take some pressure off ourselves. We don't have to have these great long explanations for things, but nor does our son need to shoulder the burden so much. Because that exasperation, oh man, do I hear that? I mean, and it's not just our son. I watch these little boys who seem, it's so true, they want so badly to please. Mm-hmm. And yet they're so bombarded with expectations. The school days are long.
Yes.
They sit still all day. And I think, how else can we, besides the shortening commands, like how else mm-hmm. can we help them? Because there will be misbehavior and there will yes. be times we are genuinely exasperated with them. So how can we handle that better as parents?
Well, I would say, going back to that explanation really quick, I think it's important to note, even that example we just used, he's got all those things to do. I'm not trying to pretend like he doesn't have a lot to do. He does. Let's just break it down. Hey, buddy, muddy cleats outside and come find me. One thing to do. And then I can praise him. Awesome job. Backpack in the locker and find me. So we're just breaking it down into manageable parts, and then we get to affirm and praise him every time he follows through. And
this is why I love spending time with you, David. You make, I'm like, oh, I could do that. I can do that. This is going to be so great. Mm.
Yeah, we overcomplicate things, I think, so much.
I think we do.
Yeah.
I do.
Children, war. These two words should not go together. Imagine your child being orphaned because of war or being kidnapped and forced to become a child soldier in a rebel army. Who would help them? Exile International provides healing for 1,300 war-affected youth in Africa through art-focused trauma care, education, and discipleship. We empower child survivors of war to become leaders for peace. Join us in our Give Up to Give Back campaign. What can your family give up in order to bring healing to children wounded by war? Visit exileinternational.org/give.
So let's go to the individual stage, age 9 yes. to 12 is how you break this out. I think the individual, it makes sense, but just explain that to us and kind of what our boys need from us.
This is that window, kind of the end of childhood before adolescence, and is a complicated stretch. And I tend to say in this moment that a boy really needs us to be functioning like the Department of Homeland Security in this moment of his development, because he's coming out of what I call the age of obedience, where he's more of a pleaser and yeah. wants the grownups to be okay with him, into the age of experimentation.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. You're laughing. I'm just thinking about the Department of Homeland Security
yes.
and what we're doing and yeah, building the wall.
Yes. And being aware, because even there, I think some of those are fails on our part of, you know, I'll have parents say, I left him alone to play the game and I told him to turn it off in 30 minutes and he didn't, as opposed to he can't regulate well in that season. So he'd be better served if we set a timer on the device and it just shuts itself off. So sometimes, again, those kinds of small adjustments that keep him safe and honor the fact that he can regulate a little bit better than he could in stage 2, but not a lot better. And so I think those are important things. And even with things like technology with stage 3 boys, with the individual, I want us to be very open with him on the front side. I don't want us to be sneaking around and doing things behind his back, like saying things like, hey, buddy, I'm going to check the history on your iPad. And if I were to find out that you'd erase that history, it comes back to me. Or, you know, if I were to find out, however we would finish that sentence, so that he's hearing us talk about how healthy accountability is. Mm-hmm. I think it's great when boys hear things like, hear their dad say, hey, your mom can look at my history anytime too.
That.
It's just a good, healthy, honest, open way to live where we're not sneaking around and doing things behind his back.
Love that.
Yeah.
So one of the other things I'm thinking of is, as we talk about each of these stages coming up to this individual stage, and going back to the concern in the beginning of feelings, right? And not being able to know what to do with feelings. Boys are clearly, with Fortnite and all these other video games, you know, and in a year from now, it'll probably be something else that's very popular. And it constantly changes. But video games are definitely the vice, if you will, for boys. And,
yes.
And they're the things that they turn to, as you said, calm and soothe their stress. How do we help our boys understand what to do with their emotions through these first couple stages? How can we as parents serve them? What do they need from us to help them navigate what to do with what they're feeling in a healthy way?
We've started traveling with feelings charts every time we speak now. We just had some made. We used to encourage parents, okay, try to go find one at a parent-teacher store. We just have them with us. But you can, any parent listening right here could download one off Pinterest. They're easy to find anywhere online. Just have that accessible. Wish every family had that somewhere in their household, the way every kindergarten classroom has the letters of the alphabet up. And that we know that when kids see it visually, it strengthens the connection. So when we're using emotional vocabulary, when we're sitting around a table at dinner and talking about our days, that we're folding in more of those words, and boys are hearing that, particularly from their dads. I want boys to hear a lot of evidence that emotions reside in the life of a man. So their dad's saying things like, I felt embarrassed today. I had to give a presentation to the board of directors and I didn't feel prepared. I felt sad today. I think I said something to hurt a coworker's feelings and I didn't mean to. So I want that to be landing on them with consistency. I think that's a huge part of it.
I love that. And that transparency of the parent too. And we talked about it too, as it relates to, we talked about this with Sissy, as it related to the power dynamic. Like when a teenage girl or preteen girl would come to her parents with a negative emotion, how we as parents can, I ask the question, you know, at what point does a parent say, well, I feel rejected by you, and, you know, not oversharing to the point that the child feels like they have to maintain the burden of the parents' emotions, but at the same time, as parents, being honest with who we are, where we are, and how we resolved it, right? Yes. Like modeling how we might have resolved that emotion ourselves.
Yes.
So
We talk in the new book about wishing that every parent had a note card or sheet of paper hanging on their bathroom mirror with the things they do to work through emotions constructively, that kids could see that. And as you shared, hear us talking about it, like, you know what, I came home really frustrated from something that happened to work, and I went out and ran 2 miles before dinner. Like, hearing those kinds of things. I talk so much in the new book about how boys need an outlet to channel the physicality of their emotions. It's why toddler age boys are a little more prone to biting and hitting and kicking, and teenage boys more prone to punching holes in drywall. And so a lot of times what they're just needing is that physical outlet, and hearing us as parents talk about what those are for us.
And I just picking up what you two are saying, especially as men, as fathers of boys, if we can just all be given the permission that we need to be doing our own work too.
Yes.
Because if we are not the secure parent for our, we cannot approach their emotions from a secure place. We're afraid of their emotions because we're afraid of ours. But if we're genuinely working on ours, and it doesn't, this is not to say we come to a place where we arrive and I'm good, I'm confident, I'm so established, nothing will faze me. It's not that. It's just that we're continually doing our own work, working so that we do have tools to offer our kids, because I did feel anxious today and this is how I dealt with it. Or I did feel sadness, or I felt sad all week, and this is how I'm dealing with it. But if we are not dealing, and I think as parents so often, especially in the young years, but then as life picks up with the pace of, you know, kids and activities as they move through the years, it's almost like we don't give ourselves the permission to deal with our own things because we're so hyper attuned to what they're doing or feeling, and just the responsibilities of life. So I just wanted to add that in there just for fathers, but mothers as well, fathers in this conversation though, to have the permission and the push to be doing our work for ourselves, because as you were saying, this is what's going to benefit our boys.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
Yeah. So let's go to the wanderer, 13 to 17, mm-hmm. those preteen, actually the teenage years, the wanderer.
This is the hardest stretch. Most developmental theorists will call this the worst episode of a boy's life. And so much of that is where I start in that chapter of just talking about, you know, he is in biological chaos at this point. I mean, he's experiencing 5 to 7 surges of testosterone pouring through his body a day, and it wreaks havoc on his system. I mean, we'll see evidence with hair growing on his lip and in other parts of the body and his face breaking out, and we will experience evidence of that he'll become a little more surly and irritable oftentimes. And I think that's so important that we anchor to that reality. In fact, I have a friend who's a pediatrician, and he said, you know, David, so many physicians have written about this reality that the only comparable stage of life for another human being is an adult female going through menopause. Just this reality that I have no control over what's happening in my body. I can't control the temperature. I can't control the emotions. Like, there are all these changes happening inside of me that I don't control the switch to.
And that's powerful.
It is powerful to think about it in that way. And so he can be, you know, really pleasant one moment and highly irritable the next. And so acknowledging that. And I talk, I hope, with a lot of clarity in that chapter about what does it look like to acknowledge and understand those things, to be aware, but we're not giving him a permission slip to be disrespectful, to just be horrible. In fact, Sissy and I both talk about, I think kids operate to the degree that we believe in them. I think they you know, rise to what we believe is true about them. And so we're going to acknowledge these hard things are happening, and we're going to call out the good in him as well. Alongside that, I talk with moms about what does it look like in that season to be a sounding board, but not a verbal punching bag, because he will turn you into the second. I love, there's a quote I put in the book, an author by the name of Gina Bria. She wrote a book called The Art of Family, and she said this definition about mothering. She said, the work of mothering sons is mostly about stepping aside with precise timing. She went on to say, I want my sons to know from me that they are free to be rooted in home and still be abroad in the world as men. And I love that language. And I talk a lot about what does it look like to be safe and to be, and I know this is hard for you to hear from me to say as a mom, but letting go, to acknowledge that part of the beginning of the individual stage and into the wander stage is about him individuating and separating out and becoming his own person. And he has to do some pulling away with his mom in particular. It does not mean he stops having relationship. In fact, I think moms continue to be one of the safest places on earth for boys. I have moms of 17-year-old boys who will say to me, he still wants me to come in his room at night and scratch his back. And in those moments is when he will talk a lot about his day. Yeah. When the lights are out and he's looking the other direction, I can get a lot out of him. And I think that's true with a lot of boys in a lot of ages. But I think moms are still a place of safety. But that relationship does start to look a little different. So there's a lot going on in the wanderer stage.
It's, you know, I'm thinking about my own development through those years. That was a rough time.
I mean,
because if you think about that 13 to 17, I was, so let's go back to 13, just for you to think about as parents, like if you have young kids and you're thinking about this journey, in seventh grade, I would have been 12. I wrestled 90 pounds. I wrestled 95 pounds in eighth grade. I wrestled 103 pounds in ninth grade. And 119 in 10th grade at 15-ish years of age. And then I bumped up to 145 my junior year. So you see like I was the smallest in the class. I was the youngest in the class. But that held me behind in team sports. So what did I do? I wrestled because I could at least individually be at a weight class, even though my weight is like, even though I'm small and I'm little. And so, you know, you even think about those types of things, like how you navigate those physically, the variation is just unbelievable. So,
well, and you're speaking to something so important. I talk in stage three and stage four about how important it is that boys have outlets. And I talk about these four outlets, an outlet to test his strength, and sports are an amazing outlet where, again, that physicality, that release, an outlet to test his mind, which school will do, but I want boys to have others, reading, art, music, different ways that he's really stretching and expanding his mind, an outlet to feel risk and adventure. And I think to the degree that a boy doesn't have healthy outlets for risk, he'll find his way to outlets for risk. I have a boy I'm working with right now who was just arrested for driving 105 on the interstate while drinking. I mean, he could have killed himself and who knows how many other people because he doesn't have any healthy outlets for risk and adventure. And I think that's different for every boy. I think it's rock climbing for some kids, whitewater rafting for others. Scouting is a great organization that I think helps boys feel a healthy sense of risk and adventure. But the last outlet I talk about is an outlet to feel purpose. And I think that is hardwired into who we are as males. I think we want to feel like we can make a place in this world. We want to feel like the things we do with our hands matters.
That's one of the things I was thinking about earlier. I think Michael Gurion, and purpose.
He talks about that beautifully.
With the purpose of boys and how, what would that be? What would that look like for us as parents to, like, if you could think of the practical, how maybe throughout each of the stages, not individually, but just as a general overall kind of, what do boys need to walk into their purpose, what God's calling them to do and how he's uniquely made them?
I would say starting with explorers, I want them to have chores and responsibilities. There's just an outrageous amount of research that continues to confirm what we've known to be true. Chores are beneficial for kids on a lot of levels, but I think even when boys act like they despise them, it gives them a sense of purpose in a family. I would say with lovers, I want boys in second and third grade to be coming back and helping with preschoolers at church or VBS or in different ways. I want individuals to be helping coach their younger sibling soccer team. I want wanderers to be volunteering, because I think it's the best medicine for his adolescence, just getting outside of himself, feeling that sense of purpose. We tap into that, his best self in those moments. So I would say throughout, anytime we're moving boys in those directions, it's a win. It is a win.
So what, as we close, what is the hope you see today for boys? What is the hope you're seeing as you meet with boys and you meet with families?
I would say one hope is Sissy and I laugh about how she and Melissa in Raising Girls could cover all of girl development in four chapters, and it took me five because we know boys are slower to move through development. And so I had to add a fifth chapter on, which we don't have time to talk about, but the fifth chapter is the warrior stage, and that's boys roughly 18 to the mid-20s. And that is a great hope I have, and I always want to offer that to parents of, even though his adolescence can, not always, but be a little more bumpy, clumsy, messy along the way, and we can start to lose heart in the wander stage, I am so quick to challenge parents of even 14-year-old boys, read the warrior stage, read where he's headed, read where he's going. I mean, he's slower to develop abstract thinking. He's slower to move into his place in the world at times too and figure out what he wants to do. It fascinates me how we launch boys at 18, 17, 18 into college and say, go be a grown-up. Figure out what you want to do in life. And he is barely into adolescence at that point.
We met two college students the other day. We were out in Chattanooga visiting someone, and there was a college student, a man and a woman there. He's probably 20. I think he was like 20 years old. And we asked him kind of what he studied. And he said, well, he's like, I just switched my major for the third time, so I'm a little bit behind. And so I mean, he's 20 years old. He switches his major. It's like, I said, I'm 39. I'm still trying to figure out what I want to be when I grow up. So,
absolutely. I switched mine for the third time at 21. So yeah, it's this reality that we're slower to make some of those connections. But you know, most developmental theorists would say boys finish adolescence somewhere between 23 and 25. So if a 17-year-old boy doesn't know what he wants to do in this world, of course he doesn't. He's still got eight more years of adolescence left.
David, thank you so much for being with us and giving us hope. Mm-hmm. This is enjoyable. If for those of you who are listening for the first time to David, you can go back and listen to the other episodes we've had. He and Sissy are recurring guests on a regular basis, and so we're so grateful to have them again. Check out the show notes. Are My Kids on Track? He referred to that book quite a bit, as well as Wild Things. We're going to put that in the show notes. These are two of our most favorite books on the planet for parenting, and so we want you to make sure that you check those out. And in the meantime, go and whatever stage your boy is in, love on him and help him navigate the world around him and enter into his purpose. We love you all, and we will see you next week. Check out InThisTogetherPodcast.com for previous episodes and to subscribe. If you have a question or a topic that you'd love us to cover, hit the submit button right there on the page.
And we would also love if you would leave us a review. Your reviews mean so much to us, and they help people learn about the podcast. And we would love, too, if you'd find us on Instagram and Facebook at Dr. Josh and Christy, or our website, drjoshandchristy.com.
Until next time, press in and enjoy the moment.